Chapter 20. The following morning he awoke feeling better. His dreams had been troubled, with serpents coiling around Naxi's neck, as she was lowered by a stranger's hands into one of the Medicaid couches. She smiled the whole time, calmly telling him it would all be fine, but that he had to tell Mother about what was going on before they connected her up. Still, when the light slanting through the blinds woke him properly, the headaches had gone. He lay in the bed for a while, on his back, looking up at the stained ceiling. Perhaps things were out of his hands now. As Brecht had said, there were no prizes for taking things further, only pain. This was his home. This was where his family were, where his heart lay. He had to protect them now. He had to mend what needed to be mended. He dragged himself from the bed, wound a robe around himself, and shuffled into the kitchen. Malija was already there, sitting at the table with a steaming mug of caffeine. He went up to her, held her by the shoulders, kissed her.
"How did you sleep?" he asked.
"Not well," she said, looking preoccupied.
"Augusto, we need to..."
"I'm on it," he said, getting a caffeine himself and coming back to join her.
"I've got Breck looking. I'll do the same thing myself this morning. She'll be holed up at a friend's, her comms off. But I've got the time now. I'll bring her back."
Malija looked up at him. Her hair fell back from her face, which was lined with worry.
"Thank you," she said. "I looked around myself, you know."
"I know. But your work never stops. Like I say, I'm on it." She nodded and leaned her elbows on the tabletop.
"So, did you find that boy?"
"In a manner of speaking."
"Then you got what you wanted?"
"No, you don't win them all."
"Oh, sorry."
He didn't tell her everything. No point in giving her bad dreams, too. He leaned forward and took her hands in his. Hers were still supple, a requirement of a job. His looked like calloused sides of meat.
"Lija, I know it's been hard. I need to tell you everything that's been going on, but I can't. Not right now.
You don't need to worry about what you've been worrying about. It's not like that. I've had some things to work through. I've been looking to get help with them."
Malija looked up at him. "That's meant to make me feel better. I just need to figure out what I'm doing, how to get my head together. I need to be better, to be truer."
"So you've been going to, what do they call it, confession?"
"Something like that."
"Why didn't you tell me?" Zidorov smiled self-consciously.
"Pride, embarrassment, I guess."
"You could have talked to me."
"I want to. I'll learn to.
It's not easy for me either." She squeezed his hand, just as Vestiva had done the night before. "I have thoughts I ought not to have. Every day more bodies to stitch up, more bad things seen and heard about. I think about what we're told to think, told to believe. And then my daughter tells me I don't believe in anything, and I wonder if she might be right."
Zidorov could have told her the full truth then. He got very close. He wanted to, and this was the opening, the first admittance of doubt.
He could tell her the cult was called Salvia, and it had been on Alecto for thousands of years, long before the ships had come bearing the insignia of the early Imperium. It had been what had kept the first settlers alive. And now, as was the way of such things, it had been realised that they had been worshipping the Emperor all along without knowing it, for the Emperor was in all things, in many forms and shapes, and always would be. And it helped, for it was born of the soil of this world, not the corrupt structures of the Adeptus Ministorum, which were empty vessels of control and coercion imposed by a distant and uncaring bureaucracy.
"So I went to the chapel," Malija said. "I prayed for the first time in ages, properly, to the angel. I asked him to keep us safe, to keep you safe. That's the best way, I think. Go back to living properly, to trusting in him. I think he'll protect us now."
The moment passed.
"I'm sure you're right," he said.
"You need to pray as well."
"I'll try to find the time."
"And just tell me if you need something. That's what we're for, each other."
He nodded. I have to be reminded now and again."
He pulled his hands back.
"We'll talk again all together. Maybe we should do some listening to her. She's not a child."
"I'd thought the same thing, but not the guard."
"There'll be a way."
He got up, reached over, kissed her on the forehead.
"There's always a way."
That was true, but he still needed to find it. He travelled the way he'd gone before, past the Goliath munition shell, out to the receiving yard for the incoming long-distance passenger haulers. He got out into the driving rain and made his way to the supervisor's office. It was a tiny cubbyhole perched high up on the edge of a run-down-looking comms tower. The walls were filled with lumen panels, each one tracking the progress of another hauler. Down below, in the holding yard, the big mag transports gouted and hissed in the drizzle. "Probator Zidor of Bastion U," he said, flashing his seal at the operator behind the desk. "I need to look at your passenger records." The woman turned from what she'd been doing, glanced at the seal. "I can do that for you, Probator. What's the name?"
"Zidorov," he said awkwardly.
"Alesinaxa. She came in on the last run from the Geriad training facility. I want to know if she left on any other scheduled run." The operator ran a check. "No records of that, Probator."
"Where's the nearest alternative long-haul terminal?"
"Out at Mergev."
"Could you get there without a ground car?"
"Not easily."
Zidorov nodded.
"Thanks. Here's the subject's ident. Circulate it, will you? If she turns up, I want to know."
Then he left, got back to the Luxor, and inputted the lock ref for the Mergev terminal. The operator had been right. It would be hard to get out there without transport. Still, Naxi was resourceful. If she'd decided to make her own way back to Geriad, then that might have been a way to do it. He pulled out of the yard and headed west up to the spine route. He put in another call to the training facility itself, asking again if she'd come back early, and was told again that she hadn't. He pondered putting a missing persons register on the Bastion system. The irony of that was not lost on him. Despite himself, he began to get uneasy. He cruised along the streets, looking out at the crowds, expecting at any moment to see her face among them. Whenever he caught a hostile gaze, he imagined it to be one of the off-worlders' operatives, hunting for young blood, offering the world, if only they'd come with them, up to the suborbitals, where there was something they really ought to see. He passed through a semi-derelict zone, marred by the blackened outline of fire-damaged manufactoria. The transitway remained busy, but the side routes looked less clogged. He eased down a bit. It was then that he noticed the tail for the first time. The ground car, three places back in the queue, was matching him for speed, changing lanes whenever he did. He picked up speed again, going carefully, watching to see if it did the same. Sure enough, it mirrored his manoeuvres. Zidorov glanced at the transitway network map on the Luxor's console lens. Below the raised main routes, the lower-grade roads were the usual tangle of older streets. He pulled across again, switching back to the exit lane, made the turn and ran down the long ramp. The ground car behind him followed, keeping its distance but not falling back. It was a smart vehicle, an expensive one, with a long nose and flared wheel arches, somewhat flashy. The kind of thing a cartel operative might find appealing. He maintained his speed. He didn't know this district, but the Luxor's machine spirit was good at letting him chart sensible routes ahead. Soon he was back in the shadowed lanes between tatty tenement blocks, out of the light, the rainwater gurgling frothily in the culverts. Gaudy commercial screens slipped past him, blinking in the semi-dark. His pursuer remained in contact. It didn't look much like they were worried about detection, but they held back just enough to encourage him to keep going. The driver was good. Zidorov pushed harder, taking a sharp right hand and powering up an ascending track crammed with food stalls on either side. As he engaged the engines, the paper lantern strung overhead swayed and bucked. A complex junction was coming up. It might be busy, but if he took it fast, it was an opportunity to lose the tail. They'd assume from his speed that he was going straight, but a hard left would plunge him into an even narrower labyrinth of side streets. There was a reason he'd opted for an expensive transport. Zidorov depressed the velocity controller and surged towards the intersection. Then he slowed sharply, letting the pursuer get a little closer. As the intersection swelled towards them both in the forward screen, he abruptly sped up, powering towards it. That had the effect he'd been hoping for, and the following ground car also picked up speed. Zidorov reached the junction, still going at speed, and kicked in the brakes, seizing up the rear wheels and sending the ground car into a slide. Spray flashed up along the right-hand side as he jarred it left before pouring on the power again. The Luxor leapt forward, skidding towards a narrow opening. Zidorov gritted his teeth, trusting to his aim, and just about made the gap. The tyres squealed along the edge of the sidewalk, lurching him around a bit until he bumped down the slender avenue back on the asphalt and kept going. He glanced into his rear viewfinder and saw his pursuer spinning wildly in the rain, engines screaming. He smiled and returned his gaze to the four view screens, just in time to see the two immense cargo haulers wedged in front of him ahead. He jammed on the brakes, causing a brace of red lumens to flare up against the console. He felt himself thrown forward against the restraints, and the ground car sheared in the wet, almost ploughing straight into the right-hand hauler. With a few inches to spare, the Luxor ground to a halt. Zidorov slumped back in his seat, breathing hard. That had almost been it. He reached for reverse, only to see another hauler emerge from a side lane, driving across the narrow artery and boxing him in. He cut the engine and reached for his Tsarina, but by then three figures, armoured and helmeted, had already emerged at his window. They weren't sanctioners, but they all carried autoguns, all of which were pointed through the armour glass right at him. Zidorov took a look up at the weapons. He wasn't any kind of true ballistics expert, but it looked very much like those things use shredder rounds.
"Don't be stupid, Probator," came the vox-distorted voice of the leader. "He only wants to talk."
"Who's he?" asked Zidorov.
"Turn the engine off. Open the door. We'll do the rest."
He considered the options. He might get lucky, take one out, use the Luxor's reinforced panels to keep him alive while he went for the others. Then he remembered Borodina's body in the Medicaid bay and what those guns had done to her. She'd had a sanctioner with her too. So he did as they said. He cracked the door, pushed it open, and emerged into the rain, his hands up.
"Just don't scratch my transport," he said, handing over the access control. "That would make me really angry."
They put a hood over his head, tying it loosely around his neck. That, he thought, was a pointless thing to do. His iris would keep a record of his movements. But then he saw that they'd got some kind of jammer working too, which made the gesture less futile. They put him into another ground car, one that smelled clean and expensive. One of the guards got in next to him, keeping an immobilizer jammed up against his ribs. They drove for a long time. He tried to relax. If they'd wanted him dead, they could have done it a long time ago. Still, there were worse things than dying in a gunfight. Many worse things. Eventually, the ground car halted, and he heard the doors open. A pair of armoured hands seized him and pulled him out. He felt rain speckle on his shoulders, but only for a short while. He heard a door slam, and then another. It got warmer, and smelled like mould and rusted metal. He was pushed into a chair, his arms straightened, and then the hood was taken off. He was in a small chamber, no windows. A couple of candle lumens burned in the corners, placed on what looked like old storage crates. The floor was damp, the walls bare cinder blocks. The guards who had brought him in had left, it seemed, closing a thick plastic door behind them. There were two chairs. He sat in one, and the off-worlder sat in the other. The man looked relaxed, sitting with his legs crossed and his hands in his lap. He wore the same dark suit. Up close, Zidorov could see how good it was. It must have been bespoke tailored, for the man's body was a strange shape. His chest was a little too big, his legs a little too long. His skin, as well as being pale, had a sweaty sheen on it, which might have come from different climatic expectations, since it wasn't that hot.
"Do you know who I am?" the man asked.
"You're Aaron Vermeeder," Zidorov said. "Jash Corporation, rank and function, well, I don't really know exactly."
"Very good. And how do you know that, I wonder?"
"I have a good memory for faces. It helps in my profession. I assume you know that I am a probator, just to give you fair warning of what you've got in front of you." Vermeeder smiled.
"I'm aware. I'm aware of quite a lot about you, Augusto Zidorov. Do you know why you're here, though, now, with me?"
There were a number of possible answers to that question. Maybe Glovak just couldn't keep his mouth shut. The worst one was that Vermeeder somehow knew about the break-in at the warehouse.
"Why don't you tell me?" Zidorov offered. "Very well. For a long time now, I've been working for Avro Lucille, whom I'm sure you've heard of. He is a busy man, and entrusts some of his more arduous tasks to me. The Jash fiefdom has been expanding in recent years. I've been privileged to play an advisory role in that expansion."
"Pays well, does he?"
"Very well. Now, things are moving fast. An alliance has been created with certain elements of the Tereshova Combine. Not all of it, you understand, just the parts that interest my client."
"Like Udmil Tereshova?"
"Quite so. Think of it as a merger, rather than a takeover."
"I couldn't imagine it any other way." Vermeeder lifted his chin, looking at Zidorov as if he were a curious specimen found on the sole of his shoe.
"It will all become public very soon. We imagine it will create quite a stir in the right quarters."
and the wrong ones.
You do not seem overly surprised.
I work hard to maintain an equable demeanour. Vermida uncurled his hand and showed Zidorov the personnel tracker from Udmil's ground car.
Perhaps, he said, that is because you have been keeping rather closer tabs on Mizzle Tereshova than she would be entirely comfortable with.
Zidorov looked at the device impassively. That's enforcer issue tech you've got there. I might have to report you for it.
It's a nice piece. It almost eluded detection entirely, but see, my client is very careful about his personal privacy. Once he and Udmil began to become more closely associated, he extended that care to her. We are assuming it came from you, Probator.
Quite a leap.
We can check it, if you like. Sir Lassile is on excellent terms with your Castellan, as I'm sure you're also aware.
Von Geller's very friendly when you pay her, that's true.
Vermida seemed to tire of the small talk then. I do not blame you for taking precautions. I might have done the same thing in your position. It is always best to be sure that what you're being asked to do accords with the truth.
He curled up his fist and crushed the tracker.
But now, due to the recent merging of operations, I am empowered to speak for Mizzle Tereshova too. She wishes you to know that your services as an investigator will no longer be required. She is prepared to overlook the placement of this device on the condition that you drop your current inquiries into the whereabouts of her son. You will be pleased to learn that Adiaid has been found safe and well. His disappearance was a juvenile escapade, just as you initially suspected, and all is now put to rights.
Glad to hear it. What a lucky coincidence.
Everyone is very relieved.
I'd like to speak to Adiaid, then, just to tie things up properly.
He's off-world, I'm afraid. The Jash Corporation has a number of concessions in void transit, and he has taken up management of one of them.
Will he be back soon?
I do not know.
Then I'd like to speak to Udmil.
As you might expect, she is also very busy. She and Ser Lassile have much to arrange, and she is doing so at his residence. A wedding, for starters.
That's a shame. It will be helpful. She started this thing running, as you probably know.
Vermida looked irritated. You are terminating your inquiries at this juncture, Probator. I do not see the need to speak to either Adiaid or Udmil. Let me be clear. This is over. Your role is done. I would gently suggest, with the very greatest of respect, that you forget about the whole thing.
Zidorov smiled. And if I don't? You'll make more use of those shredder guns your friends carry around.
Barangantua is a dangerous place. A certain degree of protection has always been advisable for those with means.
I have a few questions of my own.
Ask away.
Mordak Tereshova is not a retiring man. I'm assuming this merger didn't take place with his consent. Are you not concerned that he will be, well, quite angry about it?
Avro Lassile is not concerned about Mordak Tereshova. He and Udmil are quite secure from possible reprisals, I can assure you. In fact, the situation has already been made clear to Mordak, and in such a way that no room for doubt remained over Udmil's preferences and status.
How did he take it?
I was not present when the news was delivered.
That badly, eh?
I really don't know, and I very much don't care.
So, will the new conglomerate be taking on all the old Tereshova businesses?
Only the ones that interest my clients.
Can you tell me any more about those?
No. And I think that brings this meeting to a close. Do I have your assurance that you will drop your inquiries?
Zidorov smiled bleakly. You've made a very convincing case.
Good. So it was a pleasure to meet you, Probator. Please do stay safe out there.
Oh, I intend to.